Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Started the year in the bullpen, has gone to the starting role, and he's given up a few of those since doing it.
Josh Smith will put it in the squirrel's lap. Eighth home run of the season. When you put him into the trees here, you've done something special.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parks III, and this is RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. You can give us a call today, ARCO Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We got a lot to get to on today's show. Raging Cajuns baseball advances in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in Conway, South Carolina. NBA playoffs, Houston Astros. But we're going to lead off with LSU baseball. Pulling out the 8-6 win over South Carolina in the opening round of the SEC tournament in Hoover, Alabama. It's exactly how you scripted it to go if you're an LSU fan. You got a little hairy there. I know there are a lot of people that were concerned, and rightfully so. LSU took the early lead off that Josh Smith home run, 1-0 in the bottom of the first inning. And then Cole Henry, who has been the Tigers' most consistent and arguably their best pitcher, who earned all SEC freshman honors on Monday, went out there and pitched. And he hadn't pitched in more than a month. And in the second inning, it showed. Cole Henry lasted an inning and two-thirds as he gave up five hits, five runs, four of those earned, and faced 12 batters. And boom, just like that, because South Carolina just got the timely hits that they needed, took advantage of a young man who had not pitched in more than a month. They score five runs in the top of the second. And I know LSU fans were like, uh-oh. They pull Henry. They get Matthew Beck to come in. He stops the bleeding. He gets him out of the inning. And then they hand the ball over to Devin Fontenot. And that was all she wrote after that. Fontenot pitched phenomenal. Coming in out of the bullpen, down at that point, 5-3, because he came into the top of the third, because LSU did plate two runs in the bottom of the second to close the gap. But Fontenot was phenomenal. He pitched 4 1/3, only gave up one hit, no runs, struck out four. Then he was replaced by Todd Peterson, who came in, pitched 2 2/3 inning, gave up the one run and the one hit, but struck out three to pick up the save. Fondo, who has primarily been working out of the bullpen, is now 5-1 on the year. I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign that one of your top three leaders in wins on the team is out of the bullpen. But Devin did his job, and Todd Peterson came in and did their job and did his job. They shut down the Gamecocks' bats the rest of the way, only giving up the one run in the final seven innings of play. LSU, meanwhile, their bats woke up, plating three runs in the bottom of the fourth, another two in the bottom of the fifth to get the 8-6 win. Cody Schuetz, you stayed up and watched this game for quite a while.
I made it through into the sixth inning, I think, before I succumbed to the Sandman.
So you made it to the point.
I made it to the big Beloso hit that gave them the lead. I made it to where South Carolina put that freshman in, I think it was the fourth inning or fifth inning, they put the freshman in, and things, the wheels kind of fell off for him. He threw three pitches behind LSU batters. I mean, you could tell Kyle Peterson in the booth during the game, three batters into the freshman for South Carolina. He was calling it out like, Coach, you got to go get this kid. He doesn't have it tonight. You can see how uncomfortable he is out there. And it was pretty odd. I mean, he threw, I think, three pass balls. Two of them went, again, behind hitters. I think he maybe hit somebody on a ball that traveled about 55 feet in the air and then bounced and then hit a guy. He was just all over the place. A couple runs scored on a wild pitch for sure. And then Beloso came through with a big hit. And so, I mean, I got to see all the important rally stuff from LSU, but it's one of those things to where it depends on how you want to look at this game from my perspective. You can look at it as LSU won the game, that's great and all that, that the end result's really all that matters, but how they got there, you could say, oh, that's not that great. They you know, got a quick run early and then the starting pitching didn't look great and, you know, man, but at least they came out with a win against the team that they are more talented than. You know, that's one way to look at it. Or the more pessimistic way to look at it would be to say, or I guess maybe even more optimistic would be to say, you know what, this team didn't play their best. The guys didn't show up, and they got off to a very bad start. We're down by four runs, which I didn't even realize they had never come back from a four-run or more deficit this season.
That's correct.
And then you could say, you know what, though, they fought back, they scratched, they clawed a run here, a couple runs there, another run there, and they took the lead in the bullpen. Shirt up the end of the game. So it depends on how you want to look at it. You could say that, man, they need to get off to better starts, or you could say, hey, I'm really glad that they finished strong.
Positives for me. The bats, the lineup did extremely well. Josh Smith, 2-for-4. Antoine Duplantis, 2-for-4. Kay Beloso, 3-for-4. Daniel Cabrera, he only went 1-for-5, but he came up with a big hit. Zach Watson, 2 hits. Saul Garza, a hit. Brant Broussard, of all people, went 2-for-4. Okay? So
Kyle Hughes should have had a hit.
He should have had a hit, too.
For some reason, they were playing him straight up the middle. I don't understand. Like, who has the scouting report that says Kyle Hughes is going to hit the ball right up the middle? And I'll be damned if he didn't.
They got 13 hits as a team. They also drew three walks. The bats did their job. They scored 8 runs. And if you want to be pessimistic, I understand that this morning. But Cole Henry has not pitched in over a month. So I think the expectations were right. Paul Maneri even said, well, we just hope he gets to the third. Well, he didn't get to the third. He pitched well in the first inning. In the second inning, look, there's a couple of plays there in the second inning too, Cody, that they could have got. They could have got out of the inning. Right.
We had an Angels in the outfield play. Yep. Literally, the ball got stuck in your boy's glove.
Yep.
How does that happen? Well, we know how it happens, but I think at the very least he should have tried to frisbee his glove over there.
There was at least two plays in the top of the second.
Well, then the other one was the pitch out.
Right.
That he needed to throw the ball about 3 feet more to the outside. I mean, that there's no reason that ball should be that close. Saul Garza didn't do anything wrong on that play. Just a little inexperience, maybe a little
rushed
misplacement on the pitch. I mean, you know, it's, and he's used to Cole Henry being used to in high school if you see a pitch out, a guy's not gonna do that. Players, most of them, aren't savvy enough to know that, okay, maybe I should still throw my bat out there, and if not get catcher's interference, then at least try to interrupt his throw somewhat. In college, especially at this level, you're going to see guys with enough high enough baseball IQ to do things like that. And I'm just glad that Sewell didn't end up getting hurt, because I've had that happen before, and it's one of those ones where, like, it's broken. You mean, that's your first thought. Like, it's broken. I'm done here. And then it kind of comes back a little bit. So I'm just glad he wasn't hurt. But the second inning was one of those baseball innings where the quote-unquote baseball gods were kicked back in their dugout in the sky just laughing. Like, this is fun, y'all. This is what we do. And there's nothing you can do about it.
And despite all that, despite having your starting pitcher get run out after an inning and two-thirds, did not look good. You had some mental errors there in the second inning. LSU was still able to rally and pull out the win. Now, the negatives. How many days you're going to have to wait to use Devin Fondo again? Because he ate up 4 1/3 innings, and he's been your best guy out of the bullpen. A close second is Todd Peterson, who also pitched. Those guys combined to pitch 7 innings last night. 7. How are their arms going to hold up the rest of the SEC tournament? Which this also means now, Cody, that they're going to have to depend on Zach Hess.
I think
tonight or Thursday. Now,
if you had aspirations of winning this thing, that being the SEC tournament,
you're going to have Zach Hess to pitch.
You had to have him regardless, whether it's tonight or later, right?
So that is a concern, how much you're going to be able to use Devin Fondo. You only used Matthew Beck for the third of the inning, so you can still use him even tonight if you need to.
That was weird. I thought that was odd. I mean, I know Beck didn't exactly, you know, isn't the high held highestly by highestly. How do you like that for a word at 6:15 this morning? I know he isn't held in the highest regard by Coach Maneri, but I thought it was odd that he only came in to get that last out in the second inning, and then we didn't see him again. I thought that was kind of weird.
It was a little weird, but I think it was just a matchup. I think the game plan was Fondo was going to go after third.
Right.
I think him and Dunn were like, okay, if Henry can get through three.
It's 5-1, Paul.
Fondo's going to come in the fourth, and he's going to pitch the fourth, fifth, and sixth. And then Peterson can come in and pitch the seventh and eighth, or, you know, whatever it may be. I think that was the game plan, and that escalated when Henry was struggling. And he's like, okay, I got to throw a guy out there just to get us out of the inning. And Devin's not warmed up enough yet.
I'll take the bottom line for me, because Stone Cold said so, is the win is the win. You take the win, you're happy, you move on, you're into double elimination. You've guaranteed yourself at least two more games. But man, oh man, did I not expect to get here that type of way.
Oh, no. There's no way that anyone could have anticipated how this game went down and the fact that LSU was able to advance through.
I would have thought the game going
the
other way.
You throw out Cole Henry. He gets lit up. You have to go to the bullpen in the second inning. You're down, but the lineup steps up, rallies for you. Yeah, look, at the end of the day, LSU baseball team, they gutted out the win. They're in the double elimination portion of the bracket. They keep their hopes alive of hosting an NCAA regional. And they'll take on a Mississippi State team that they beat twice. They took 2 or 3 from Mississippi State during the regular season.
I just say Todd Walker loves LSU, by the way?
No.
He gassed LSU the entire night last night. Like, Kyle Peterson, even at a certain point, I felt like Kyle Peterson was just baiting him now. He was like, what else do you want to say about LSU? Talk about Skip Bertman, Todd. What do you have to say about Skip? I mean, it was getting to the point where I was like, Todd, do you not realize?
Talk,
like,
about how you have the old bleacher seats from the old Alex Box Stadium. Right? In your living room.
Dude, they're just, I was like, you know what? Do your thing. This is why SEC Network hired you.
Exactly. But LSU survives and advances. They'll take on Mississippi State. It's a 5-4 matchup there. Once again, that is the late game. Last night's game didn't start until 8:50. You're probably looking at a similar situation tonight, because it'll be the last of the four games tonight, LSU-Mississippi State. But you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game, tentatively scheduled for 7:30. First pitch tentatively scheduled for 8 o'clock.
I don't know how we're going to do it again, Ray. I don't know. I made it to like the 6th to last night. I don't know what I got in me tonight. This is going to suck.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company, the Raging Cajuns, they survive in advance as well. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on OUS Fiber. You can give us a call if you'd like on the Arco Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. LSU wasn't the only team that survived and advanced in their conference tournament opening round last night. The Raging Cajuns, UL, took care of business, defeating App State by the final score of 6-2. App State had defeated the Raging Cajuns during the regular season 2 out of 3 games in a weekend series set. Did so by the slimmest of margins. This game wasn't that slim last night. Brandon Young started the game for the Raging Cajuns. He pitched 4 2/3 inning, gave up 2 runs on 3 hits, struck out 8. So a pretty strong performance from him. But after he left the game, App State had plated a couple runs. It was a tied ball game. And the Raging Cajuns had to hand the ball over to Austin Perrin. And he took care of business the rest of the way. 3 innings of work for the young man, only surrendering 1 hit, no runs. And then Gunnar Leje, that's right. Austin Perrin got the win for the Raging Cajuns, and then Gunnar Leje came in and got the 4-out save for his 4th save of the year. He pitched an inning and a third, no hits, no runs, while striking out 3. So, good performance by the UL pitching staff. Like I said, Young pitched fairly well, 4 2/3, only gave up the 2 runs on 3 hits. And then the bullpen stepped up for the Raging Cajuns. The bats were not sensational last night. UL only recorded 5 hits, scored 6 runs off of 5 hits. But leading the way was Hayden Cantrell. He was 2 for 2, the former Terlings Catholic star. Also had an RBI. Hunter Castles, he was the big fella last night, had the huge hit. He only had the 1 hit, but it was a big one, the home run, 3. And he brought in 3 RBIs. I'm sorry, no, a double that brought in 3 RBIs. And then that was pretty much it, besides Brennan Breaux, the former STM star, going 2 for 3. So 2 local products, Brennan Breaux and Hayden Cantrell, they stepped up. They're the only ones that had multi-hit games for the Raging Cajuns. And then Hunter Castles came in with the big hit there in the 5th inning. I'm sorry, in the bottom of the 6th inning, where he got the 3 RBIs to come in. 6-2 win. The game was marred by some ugly play. Both teams had 2 errors each. But, once again, it's all about surviving and advancing. UL will now face Georgia Southern today. First pitch is scheduled for that game over in Conway, South Carolina at 11:30 a.m. Okay, so they were one of the later games last night. Then they got to turn around and be one of the early games today. Congratulations, you won. And now you get to turn around even quicker. Not exactly an ideal situation. Yeah, Hunter Castles, the senior, he stepped up in that big spot. He had the go-ahead 2-run double down the right field line. They gave him the insurance runs. He's been an extra base hitting machine as of late. He produced at least 1 in each of his last 4 games. He also tacked on the 3 RBIs against the Mountaineers, his team-leading 23rd multi-RBI game of the season. Cantrell and Breaux were the only other Cajuns to get hits, both of them getting 2. It's a good sign for the Cajuns, though, that Gunnar Leje came in and looked good, and so did Austin Perrin. Austin Perrin had some slip-ups down the stretch. Gunnar Leje, we know, was supposed to be the anchor of this staff and just has never been able to fully recover and return back to the form that he displayed before having to miss all of last season to multiple surgeries. But he looked good, and he's looked good of late. And he came in and did what he was supposed to do, picked up his fourth save of the season, struck out three. He only faced four batters. He struck three of them out. If you're Tony Robichaux and your staff, that's what you love to see. You love to see that your guy can step up, go in there, and close the door. The bats, though, may be concerned moving forward when they play Georgia Southern today. UL didn't record its first hit of the game until the fourth inning, but did find itself ahead 2-0 after scoring a run in the first on a throwing error, and then one in the second frame on a sack fly. So we'll see. You'd like to have more than just the five hits. Georgia Southern obviously is one of the better teams in the Sun Belt Conference this year. But still, a win is a win. They survive in advance, and their season continues. And look, Cody mentioned it on yesterday's show. Baseball's a funny game. Anything can really happen. So you don't know. I mean, you don't know how Georgia Southern, you expect them to be ready. You expect them to be raring to go, right? They're in one of the top seeds in the Sun Belt Conference tournament. They're playing a team with a lesser record, supposedly lesser team. But we see it all the time. These teams get upset. Will they be prepared? Will the Cajuns' bats just come alive? Will Hanson Monica have a huge game? Will Todd Lott have a huge game? Those guys didn't get a hit yesterday. Or they do? Well, that'd be great if they could later today around midday. So Raging Cajuns, they advance on out of the single elimination portion. They get to the double elimination portion of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. We'll talk more about the Sun Belt Conference Tournament and the Raging Cajuns as we welcome on the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Dan McDonald, next, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III. Cody Schutz is producing, as always, making sure I sound at least competent. Maybe not good, but just competent. That's what we're going for on this Wednesday edition. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Before the break, we talked about the Raging Cajuns getting a much-needed win in the single elimination portion of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament as they bested App State, a team that had defeated them 2 out of 3 games during the regular season. They move on. They play Georgia Southern later today at 11:30 there at the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in Conway, South Carolina. We're going to talk a little bit about more about the Raging Cajuns and the tournament with our next guest. He is the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. He was one of the best SIDs in the state, if not the country, after spending almost 20 years at UL in that capacity. He was also a national award-winning writer for the Daily Advertiser. He's at the Sun Belt Conference Tournament right now, serving in a scoring capacity. He's doing whatever he can to help out the conference. It's the one and only Dan McDonald. Dan, how are you this morning?
I'm still not going to be home for the Zydeco extravaganza, though. It's like, well, I'm going to miss out because Championship Sunday is here. I don't know if the Raging Cajuns can get to that point. I don't know if they have the pitching to get to that point, but they did enough last night to get through the one and done, to get through the back against the wall game, and now at least they're in a situation where they have, you know, they have as much chance as anybody now.
And they and you're exactly correct, Dan. They have just as much as chance as anyone does. What did you think about the pitching? It was a strong performance from start to finish. I thought they got exactly what they needed. Austin came in, he pitched well, and then of course Gunner came in, got the save, and he pitched probably some of the best baseball that we've seen, striking out 3 of the 4 batters he faced. What did you think of what Tony Robichaux and his staff was able to do with the pitching last night?
Well, if you go back and look, it was a microcosm of what Tony Robichaud talks about, you know, every time he gets a chance to talk about his pitching staff. And the only runs that Appalachian State scored were gift runs. The two walks, a pass ball, and that was pretty much it. Other than that, you know, there's absolutely zero room to question anybody's pitching. You know, now the question is, you question their pitching depth. How far can they go with the group that they have with the current situation as far as shorthanded bodies and so forth? But, you know, I mean, Tony himself said last night, you know, once you get to this point, you've got to hit. Nobody in the league, in this league, has enough pitching to do this tournament. So now you've got to hit it. You've just got to do that. And they did it good enough yesterday to win. They're going to have to do it a lot better from here on in.
We're talking with the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Dan McDonald. Dan, let's talk a little bit about the hitting, because Hayden Cantrell, former Terlings Catholic star, Brennan Brough, former STM star, they're the only Cajuns that had multiple hits in the game. Hunter Castles came up with the big hit that gave them a couple of insurance runs, but that was it. Any concerns whatsoever that they only managed five hits against App State?
I don't think so, because App threw some good arms. I mean, they were in the same situation the Cajuns were. They're in a situation where, you know, one and out, and you're, you know, if you lose one game, you're going home. So they threw, you know, everybody that they would throw in that type of situation that I would have expected them to throw in a winner, you know, winner goes on, loser leaves town game. They won't see that from here on. You know, they'll see good pitching from Georgia Southern, but it won't be great. And then from here on out, you know, it's going to be a matter of attrition. You know, somebody's got to step up. In fact, Tony said last night after the game, they need an unsung hero. That's what he told his pitching staff. They need somebody to step up that hasn't done it so far, hadn't done it recently, hadn't done it in a while. They need somebody to do what Hunter Castles has done for the offense over the last 3 weeks.
We're talking with Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer Dan McDonald. Dan, let's talk a little bit about the mindset of this team. It seemed like they turned a corner. They won their final three weekend series, taking two of three at Coastal, sweeping Georgia State, and then taking two of three at ULM. In your opinion, as someone who's always around the team, covering the team, what was the turning point for them? Was it just simply they got healthy enough to start taking these weekend series, or was it just execution?
Well, I think they're to the point that they don't have to rely on one or two guys to provide the offensive punch. And that's what was happening early in the year. You know, now, toward the end of the year, you know, Hayden Cantrell, you know, started struggling a little bit more, not struggling, but wasn't turning in the numbers that he had, you know, at about the midpoint of the season. But that's about the time that Hunter Castle stepped up. I was looking on incredulously last night when Appalachian State intentionally walked Hayden Cantrell to get to Hunter Castles. I mean, you look at the numbers for the all season long. Yeah, maybe that was the right thing to do. But you look at the numbers over the last 3 weeks, you don't even think about ever trying to. You think about doing it the other way around. I think that was a tactical mistake, and Castles made Appalachian State pay for it. They need guys to do that same thing. They need guys to step up and produce, kind of like Castles has over the last 3 weeks. And, you know, you start to see a little bit of it. They hit some balls hard last night that Appalachian State made some solid defensive plays on. You know, I think they're going to hit the ball hard again, you know, today when they play at 12:30, 11:30 your time. But they're going to have that. And I think they are going to get that more. I think they're going to hit better now that sort of the monkey's off their back. They know even if they lose, they're still not hitting home.
Dan, tell us a little bit about today's opponent, Georgia Southern. The Eagles won 32 games during the regular season. Them and the Cajuns did not face each other this year due to the schedule. What can you tell us about what Georgia Southern brings to the table?
Well, you know, they went 32-23, and they went into the last weekend with a chance, you know, to win the overall conference championship. Had Texas State not end up winning two out of three, but they didn't win the East, so they're, you know, they're a very solid team, but again, they're sort of like a lot of other teams in this league. You know, they're not great. I don't know if this league really has a team that you can call great this year. I mean, Texas State was probably the best overall. But the thing is, Georgia Southern's been very good in the tournament. They've reached a championship game in some form or fashion of conference before they're in the Sun Belt 21 times, and they've won 10 conference tournament championships in their history. Now, that goes back to the time before they were in the Sun Belt, obviously. But, you know, they lost they did lose their last game, but that was really meaningless. It didn't mean anything in the series against Georgia State. But, you know, they did win enough in that series to clinch the East, and they really hit the ball well. Earlier in the month of May, they had 5 straight games. They scored 10 runs or more in 5 straight. So they can hit. Their question is, a lot like the Cajuns, can they pitch? They're playing, obviously, one fewer game, so they can run their best folks out there today. But, you know, if Cajuns can hit, you know, it all comes down to that. I don't think it matters who they play. And Tony Robichaud says that over and over. Doesn't matter who we play. It's all about us.
We're talking with Dan McDonald, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Dan, speaking of pitching, who's going to be getting the start today for the Raging Cajuns?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, because Tony danced around that last night after the game, and you know that was expected. You know, we asked, you know, we said who's going to throw, and he sort of laughed and said, you know, he talked for about 2 minutes and said, well, that was the long answer to the short one would have been, I don't know. He mentioned Logan Savoy's possibility, and he mentioned Grant Cox's possibility. But that was just names he was throwing out. Could it be one of those guys? If I had to guess, I'd guess it would be one of those two guys. But, you know, it could be. You know, there are 3 or 4 other guys that could jump out there and start. It's an all-hands-on-deck situation, not quite as much as yesterday, but again, if they need somebody to step up and throw a couple innings today, you know, it doesn't matter what your name is, you know, you could get called.
Dan, how good was it to see Gunnar Leje go out there and be dominant on the mound?
It was good, but it was what everybody expected. You know, I think that when he came out, and I think that, you know, I looked down at the Cajun dugout, and there was sort of a calmness. You know, I said, okay, you know, this is good. And, you know, they got the 2 extra runs in their half of the inning before Gunnar went back out. And, you know, that made them feel a little bit better. But I think there was, you know, if you asked anybody in that dugout, they would have probably told you, well, okay, game's over. We win. Let's go on to the next day. And I think a little bit of that creeped over into the App State dugout, too. When they saw him come in, they knew who he was. And, you know, when they saw he was, you know, he had his stuff, he was throwing strikes, you know, I think it was pretty much a, you know, a matter of, okay, this was a fun ride, and let's head back home now.
Yeah, it's a fun ride, let's head back home now. Yeah, and that's a great advantage that they have, Dan, is that they have a guy who was supposed to be the anchor of their rotation, didn't quite get back fully recovered to take on that role this year, but he still has filthy stuff. He still has stuff that big league teams are going to want, and he's more than likely going to get drafted. So how much of an advantage is that for Tony Robichaud and his staff for the rest of the tournament, knowing that they have Gunnar, he's pitching well, but they have Gunnar Leje that they can bring in to close the door?
Well, the question is, how much can they bring him? You know, I wouldn't figure that we would see him at all today.
Okay.
Being the competitor he is, you know, I wouldn't surprise to see him again in some type of similar role tomorrow. And it's just a, you know, the question is on him now. Can he do it? And they trust him enough for them to tell him, said, okay, yes, we can do that. You know, we can, you know, I can do that. I'm ready to go. I can throw today, or I can't throw today. You know, and whatever he tells them, they trust him enough that they say, okay, you know, then we will move on to the next option. I mean, I don't think we'll see him today. Their probably perfect scenario was they don't have to see him again tomorrow, and they give him a chance to get to Friday and then kind of see what happens. But, you know, that's again, for that to happen, somebody else is going to have to step up.
Dan McDonald, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, joining us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Dan, one more quick question. I know you're going to be out there for the entire tournament. Are you going – this is the most important question I'm going to ask you. Are you going to be able to squeeze in any golf while you're out there in beautiful South Carolina?
Oh, already did that. Well, that was last week. That was late last week and over the weekend. you know, now I'm sitting down here, or now I'll be sitting here the rest of the time with all the rest of our crew. And, hey, a reminder to everybody, you can watch all of the Sun Belt Tournament on the ESPN Plus platform. If you're a Cajun fan and you've already done it, you know, where you've been able to watch Cajun events all year long, turn on the ESPN Plus, and they're all there with our buddies Todd Stewart and John Gregory. You'll have every moment of it. So that's a great option for people to keep up with the whole tournament. And not just the Cajuns. You can see every game.
Dan, appreciate you coming on with us this early in this morning. Enjoy the rest of the tournament, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it.
That's Dan McDonald, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, joining us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, breaking down Raging Cajuns baseball, who got the big win yesterday, 6-2 over App State. They will face Georgia Southern today, 11:30 our time, 12:30 Eastern. They're in the double elimination portion of the bracket. Anything can happen now. As you heard from Dan, Georgia Southern, yes, they won 32 games. They're typically very good in the conference tournament. But there's not a dominant team in the Sun Belt this year. And when there's not a dominant team, anything can happen. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up the first hour right here on 103.7 The Game. The hot summer sun is in high gear, and it's time to cool off. And what better way to do that than a trip to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge? 103.7 The Game wants to send you there with a free family four-pack of tickets. Just text H2O to 68683. That's H2O to 68683 for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge. So what are you waiting for? Text H2O to 68683, and you could be cooling down soon.
Fun fact about Blue Bayou Dixieland and Raymond.
Give it to me.
When I was younger, I used to go there often. They do.
I lived like 12 minutes away from there and never went as a kid.
Yeah, I lived like 45 minutes away, but I went. I say often, but during the summer, it was a place I visited. They do a summer weekend concert series type thing where they bring people in and they do a show on like Saturday nights or something like that. I forget.
Uncle Cracker.
Right. Well, the funny I've seen in concert there. I've seen. Metro Station, who is famous for that one song that one time. Miley Cyrus's brother is like the lead singer of that band. I've seen Good Charlotte. Good Charlotte was in there. This is the anthem. Throw all your hands up. Y'all got to feel me sing if you're with me. I've seen Good Charlotte in concert there. I mean, it's just these are all bands that were either like one-hit wonders. You saw them way past their prime. Or you saw them so far ahead of their prime that, like, no one cared at the time. It was like when the Backstreet Boys played in the Calico Point Capete Gymnasium. That's a real thing. That's a true story. In the 90s, the Backstreet Boys, the early 90s, they played in the gymnasium at Calico Point Capete in New Roads, Louisiana. And then, like, just a few years later, were the Backstreet Boys. So, just in case you were wondering.
I don't know what to do with that.
Cody shoots, doing what he does best, interrupting sports talk with Rika? Not sports talk.
Continue.
Oh, I love you, brother. Oh, I got nothing but love for you. Let's give the people an update on the poll question. Let's remind everyone our Twitter poll question was from yesterday.
I got this. It was Let's see, that's sink or swim. That's not our gimmick. Let's see, here we go. Do you think that, do you think the Saints should go after Gerald McCoy?
That's right.
The former Tampa Bay Buck. Almost 100 votes in on this one. That's a pretty big sample size here. 86% say yes.
Thank you, Acadiana.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done.
And if
he's Tampa not Bay, signing with the Saints, though.
Well, no, but it would be great if he did. Apparently, Odell Beckham is like, hey, bro, you didn't go to LSU, but that doesn't matter. Can you come to Cleveland?
Right.
I don't understand Tampa Bay. Well, Tampa Bay makes poor decisions. The Bucs franchise in general.
Two words. Dirk Cutter.
Oh, just so many bad So many bad decisions. So many bad front office decisions, draft decisions, free agent decisions, coaching decisions.
One word, Dirk.
Just so bad. You take a guy who's a perennial all-pro, six-time pro bowler, has been with your franchise, he's the leader of your defense, and you're like, nah, bro, I don't want to. He was owed $13 million. Apparently, they're signing Ndamukong Suh to a one-year deal worth almost $14 million. So, it's like, we say what? Say what?
If you gave me
McCoy, known to being a leader, good locker room presence, doesn't get excessive penalties, doesn't get have a reputation for being kind of a dirtbag on the field. Okay, and he's one of the top three defensive tackles in the league. Okay, we're going to cut him, and we're going to sign a guy who's now on his third team in 3 years, is a very talented player, one of the best at his position, but comes with baggage, and we're going to pay him essentially the same amount of money. Okay, sure.
This is coming from a guy who does not go anywhere near the field or this level of competition in football, but I would think I would rather my team face this season coming up, I would rather see Ndamukong Suh on the other defensive line than Gerald McCoy.
I would agree.
Now, maybe that's just me coming from a guy who doesn't play the game. Maybe I'm off base here, but my thoughts, I would rather face
Suh is still a good player, but McCoy is still a little bit better. Suh has dropped off a little bit.
Right, past his prime. Going down the hill now.
He's on the back end of his career. Even though him and McCoy were drafted back-to-back in the same draft. But I still think McCoy's got more left in the tank. So, Tampa Bay doing Tampa Bay things. God bless them. First hour's in the books. NBA playoff talk up next, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when you look up in the stadium and you see your mom, see your head, night in and night out, it's just different. And I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home, to do it, deserve it, feeling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
The Bledsoe far side drives on Van Vliet, kick out to Connaughton. The floater off the lane, no good, rebound Powell. On the drive, Lowry down the left side, far wing.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. First hour, we let off talking about LSU baseball surviving and advancing, getting past South Carolina. Moving on to today, when they'll be facing Mississippi State. That game is tentatively scheduled for 8 p.m. first pitch from Hoover, Alabama. You can listen to the game live as well as pregame right here on 103.7 The Game. We also talked about the Raging Cajuns. They survive in advance, take care of App State. They move on to the double elimination portion of their tournament, Sun Belt Tournament, there in Conway, South Carolina. And we had that broken down for us, the win, and how the Cajuns can move forward with the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Dan McDonald, who joined us in the first hour. But the NBA playoffs are going on. Western Conference Finals, they are over, as we talked about on yesterday's show. Golden State Warriors without Kevin Durant. Iggy got hurt as well. No DeMarcus Cousins, didn't matter. They were down by 17 points, 18 points, 17 points in three straight games versus the Portland Trail Blazers, and yet they still rallied in the second half in all those games, won to sweep Portland. They're waiting. They're going to have 10 days off, and they're going to be facing a tired team, whoever they face, because the Toronto Raptors last night evened up the Eastern Conference Finals, two games apiece, as they trucked the Milwaukee Bucks 120-102. Kyle Lowry had 25 points, and that's the key for Toronto. Look, we all know how much of a tremendous star, playmaker, impact player Kawhi Leonard is. He's a top five player in the league. He may not be top five in dynamic personality, but the cat is one of the top five best players in the league. And he's the best two-way player in the league. But if Toronto was going to do something, they needed help. It couldn't just be Kawhi by himself. And the fact that they had Kyle Lowry step up last night, score 25 points, while Leonard had 19 points, that's what they need. They need Kyle Lowry to be that second guy to help out Kawhi Leonard if they want to have a chance to win the Eastern Conference Finals. Lowry said this afterwards, quote, "This was one of the nights that we knew Kawhi was a little bit limited and we had to come out and be aggressive for him." And that's because Leonard played 52 minutes in the double overtime win in Game 3 on Sunday, despite dealing with leg soreness. And he limped away from the basket during a third-quarter dunk in Game 4, but still toughed it out, playing 34 minutes. He said this afterwards, Leonard did, "I feel good. I'm going to keep going and keep fighting. We have a chance to make history." Another contributor for the Toronto Raptors, Serge Ibaka, he had 17 points and 13 rebounds. The Raptors are now 7-2 at home this postseason. Even reserve Norm Powell scored 18 points. Marc Gasol had 17 points and a team-high 7 assists. That's what they're going to have to do. If the Raptors want a chance to win the Eastern Conference Championship and move on to the finals to face the Golden State Warriors, they're going to have all these other guys step up, like Kyle Lowry, like Serge Ibaka, like Marc Gasol, like someone like Norm Powell, who no one knew about until last year, or until last night, rather. The Greek freak, Giannis, he had 25 points and 10 rebounds for the top-seeded Bucks. Chris Middleton dropped in 30, but no one else on the Bucks had more than 11 points. That's the difference. The Raptors and the Bucks stars, their two best players, they got their points, but the Raptors, other guys in their starting five and on their bench stepped up with scoring. Milwaukee didn't have that. Milwaukee has lost its second straight, following a six-game winning streak in the postseason. It dropped consecutive games just once during the regular season. That was at Utah and at Phoenix back on March the 2nd and the 4th. So this is uncharted territory for the Bucks. So they're going to have to kind of ride the ship, so to speak. But now this is going to be what appears to be a heck of a series. It's going to go back and forth. They're just so evenly matched. They both have generational talents in Kawhi Leonard and the Greek Freak. They have salty veterans on there. The Raptors have Ibaka. The Bucks have Gasol. Look, they have guys with a lot of playoff minutes on here. This is going to be a dogfight of a series. And now it definitely has to go six games. Don't be surprised if this is a seven-game series. And it's really a coin flip between the two. These are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, and they're battling out in the conference finals, as expected. You know, for the Bucks, though, like I said, Greek Freak, 25 points. Chris Middleton, 30. But look at the rest of their lineup. Eric Bledsoe only had 5. Brooke Lopez had 8. Mirotic, former New Orleans Pelican, he's the one that had the 11 points. They had no one else. No one else stepped up for them. That's why they lost. That's why they lost by 18, because if you look at the Raptors, 3 of their starters scored in double figures, and then they had 3 players come off the bench to score in double figures. Powell with 18, Ibaka with 17, and he had the 13 rebounds. He had the double-double for him. And then Van Fleet came off the bench and scored 13. 3 starters in double figures, 3 players off the bench in double figures. That's why the Raptors won. So these other guys, these other bench players, Hill, Brogdon, Frazier, those guys are going to have to step out for Milwaukee, and they're going to have to get more production from Brook Lopez and definitely Eric Bledsoe if the Bucks want a chance to win. So we'll see. Definitely a competitive series. And it's not to say that the Western Conference final series wasn't competitive, because it was. The Trailblazers came out with a great game plan. No Kevin Durant. They went after him. They executed their game plan. They built up double-digit leads in three straight games. But the Warriors are just that much better. So even though it was a sweep, at least it was competitive. At first glance, you're like, well, they got swept. No, it's not like they lost those games by 25 points. Golden State just flexed their muscles and said, hey, we're going to the finals for the fifth straight year. And the longer the Eastern Conference finals continues, we're at least going to get it to now Saturday. Game 5 will be Thursday at Milwaukee, with the series tied 2-2. And then Game 6 will be back in Toronto. And then if a Game 7 is needed, it won't be till Monday. The longer this series goes, the more this helps the Golden State Warriors. Because that's just an extra day for Kevin Durant to get healthy. That's just an extra day for Andre Iguodala to get healthy. That's just an extra day for DeMarcus Cousins to possibly play. I would expect all three of those guys to play in the finals. Now, how much time is going to be spent on the floor for those guys? Well, that's debatable. But I would think you're going to see a little bit of DeMarcus Cousins. I think you're going to see Kevin Durant play. His minutes will likely be restricted. And Iguodala, I think, will be ready to go for Game 1. But now the two-time defending champs, the team that's won three of the past four Larry O'Brien trophies and was a LeBron James block and Kyrie Irving three-pointer away from winning another, is just sitting back, getting healthy, practicing, and watching the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks beat up on each other for at least six games, more than likely seven. I'll be stunned if this series doesn't go seven games, because it's been back and forth the whole time. But tremendous. It's playoff basketball. And Kyle Lowry will need to continue to playing at the level that he played at last night. Kawhi was banged up. He was hobbled. He was not himself. Other guys needed to step up. Now, the big question mark for the Raptors and their number one fan, the Drizzy, Drake himself.
Do we give this one to Drake a little bit more, since he is from Canada?
Yeah, that is his team. And I want to say he has a part ownership stake in the Raptors.
You can't say it's his team. They're all his team.
Well, he's from Toronto, so that's his team that he reps.
So do we allow... Yeah, but let's not act like if we went into Drake's closet, we wouldn't find a Golden State Blazer. Or a
Miami Heat LeBron James jersey.
A Portland Blazer. Look out.
Oh, Shoots is on fire this morning.
Scotty's on fire. But in all seriousness, though, are we actually going to say that Toronto Raptors, that's Drake's basketball team in the NBA?
He does have a stake in it, and he's there courtside for all their games.
All the games?
Most of the games. He's like Spike Lee.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Speaking of Spike Lee, Brock Lesnar, when he came out with the Money in the Bank briefcase, and he had it up to his head because he was like rocking like it was a boombox to the boos of the people, it reminded me a lot of Radio Raheem. And I just want to shout out to Radio Raheem, because they did that boy wrong. Do the right thing. This one.
Cody Shoots, doing what he does best. Interrupting sports talk with... Rika? Not sports talk.
Don't act like Do the Right Thing is not a great movie.
It is a great movie. I have it at the house.
That one I've seen, Raymond.
How about The Wrestler that I let you borrow in November? Have you got around to watching that one yet, brother?
I have not.
There it is.
No.
There it is.
I almost got all the way through Die Hard, though. the kid came in the room. It's not exactly a movie you can leave on when the six-year-old wanders
you
back
You still haven't finished watching Die Hard from start to finish?
Not all at one time.
I don't know what to do with you. How have you not seen Die Hard from start to finish?
I don't know. I mean, I know enough about it at this point to where I feel like I've seen the movie. And that's not just from you. That's just from living in the world.
Just living in
the world.
You're
just being alive. You kind of like, if you don't know how Avengers Endgame ended by now, then good job.
Shame on you.
No, but I would really, you know, give us a call. 337-706-0111 if you don't know how Avengers Endgame ended, because I'm intrigued to find out how you've avoided that information for this long.
Or better yet, if you want to call the ARCO Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111 and ask Cody how in the hell is he at his age and has not watched Die Hard from start to finish. I even let you borrow my copy.
I still have it. It's on Blu-ray.
I know.
I'm sorry. I don't know what you want from me. I can't just... I've seen it, Raymond. I've totally seen it. Is it Steve McClain? That's his name, right? That's who we're...
Steve McClain, he says.
It's John McQueen and Steve McClain. Go to break.
You listen to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game.
To Brazil for having the character to throw with him.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out as well on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That, ladies and gentlemen, was...
Mauro Ranallo doing the damn thing.
Doing the damn thing.
Mauro might be the greatest... fight a commentator of all time. He is so good. If you didn't know, and I'll let you get to your comments here, but Mauro Ranallo, the guy that calls those that fight there that you heard the Mamma Mia and all that, he is the lead play-by-play announcer for WWE NXT. He also does the NXT takeovers. He does the NXT tapings in Florida. So Mauro Ranallo calls boxing and WWE, and he is famous for... because his name is Mauro Ranallo.
Right.
And it's as about Italian as it gets.
Deontay Wilder is a bad man, and he proved it again on Saturday. I'm sure everyone has seen this, where he took his competitor and just buried him with that right hand. The fight had just begun. The fight had just begun, the heavyweight title bout there at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn over the weekend. But Wilder's explosive right hand just knocked out his opponent. Boom, Wilder's now 41-0-1 with 40 KOs. It's yet another violent finish to his career with a brutal one-punch knockout at the 2 minute and 17-second mark of round one. Wilder is 33 years old. It's his ninth defense of the WCB title that he originally captured back in 2015. And he just knocked him the hell out, man. Now.
Ouch.
Great knockout punch. But now this sets up a possible Wilder versus Joshua fight. Anthony Joshua is 22-0-0. Setting this up. Buzz is already building about the Wilder versus Joshua fight. Wilder himself says it feels like it's an obligation that they should do it and get it together. And the buzz is already building with that, where you have the legend himself, George Foreman, has come out and said that the fight could be bigger than Ali Frazier. Now, I think George Foreman has someone he's to check on Uncle George, because to think that as great as Wilder is and Joshua is, to think that that's going to be on any level resembling an Ollie Frazier fight is just ludicrous, in my opinion. Would this be great for the heavyweight division, which has had some lackluster title bouts and lack of interest in recent years? Absolutely. But yes, George Foreman said that the Joshua Wilder fight could be bigger than Ollie versus Frazier. No, George. No, George.
Here's
no, George. No.
To continue to, still in fighting talk here, you know Tony Robbins, right? Self-help guru guy. He's always, you know, there to make you a better person. Yes. He had Conor McGregor on, I guess it was a podcast he does or something like that. And if you want to talk about a fight that could be as big as Ali or something like that, then I think you have to flip over to UFC and talk about the possible rematch between Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov. We all remember how that ended in a gigantic brawl outside of the cage. This is not WWE. This is a real fight. People were throwing chairs and whatnot. Check this quote out, Ray. I think you'll like this. Conor McGregor told Tony Robbins, "At the end of the day, I landed the final blow of the night right on his brother's eye socket. Although the match didn't go my way, the fight went my way. And trust me when I tell you, Tony, the war is not over. If this fight does not happen again, if it does not get reset, it's on them. They are running away. I'm here for the fight and here for the rematch."
I have questions.
You have to fight him now. You can't let him say that and then not fight him.
I have questions.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he telling this to Tony Robbins?
Nah, who knows? It doesn't, because it's Conor McGregor, and that's a thing he would do.
Did Conor McGregor, going through a rough patch when he was 15, have a Tony Robbins tape that helped him get into mixed martial arts?
It could be.
Why is he talking to Tony Robbins about the fight game?
He's probably plugging his proper 12 Irish whiskey or something like that.
I'd be concerned if I'm a Conor McGregor fan, because if he's hanging out with Tony Robbins, that means he has some confidence issues and he needs to be resetting. He needs a little help with his life. And if that's the case, then his behind doesn't need to be anywhere near the damn octagon, because he's going to get punked, first of all.
Well,
second of all, he also said, yeah, he said the war's not over with him and Khabib.
Right, right.
He also wants a rematch with Floyd Mayweather. He says, "I know I would win."
Well, that's for the money. That's for the money right there. I think he thinks he can legitimately beat Khabib in a fight, but he just, I mean, Mayweather, that's just for the money. And also, before we end up wrapping it up here, going to break in a couple of minutes, I want to shout out to Roy. He called in while you were talking boxing there, and he proved me wrong. Roy is a man in Acadiana who absolutely has no idea about Avengers or anything. And what's even more impressive is it sounds like to me Roy's entire family, the wife, the kids, they've all seen it. And he has he couldn't tell me anything about it. He said he's not on the Facebooks or the Snap Faces or the Instagrams or Twitters, none of that. He has no idea. So shout out to Roy. You, my friend, are a rare breed. I couldn't do it. So he said he just has no interest in it. And see, that right there, he loses me.
I bet you Roy's seen Die Hard.
Oh, yeah, because he ended the phone call with yippee-yay, boy.
Yeah.
So, yes, Roy has absolutely
100%
seen Die Hard. Yes.
Thank you, Roy.
But thank you to Roy for not making me feel too bad about it. He got his rib in, but he didn't make me feel too bad about it.
I know a lot of people that haven't watched the Avengers movies.
But not that they haven't watched them, but
they're
I
older.
Bet you
they skew older, obviously.
But I bet you they know, mini spoiler alert, they know who dies in the movie.
Well, yes, because people talk.
Exactly. But Roy has no clue.
Good for Roy. God bless him. So you think Conor and Khabib's going to make that fight happen?
You have to. If Khabib doesn't fight him now, Khabib loses. I don't care if you carry around the belt. I don't care if you even beat the diamond. You're still a loser because you let Conor say that about you.
But that bout with the diamond's going to happen first.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen first.
That's supposed to be tentatively scheduled, as we had
in September, something like that.
Dustin on last week, right, on the show. He said they're trying to get September. So Conor's going to have to wait till next year.
Yep.
But if he wants to fight,
it'll be worth it.
Is Conor, I'll ask you real quick, is Conor going to fight this year?
Before December? Before January? Yes. I'm going to say yes.
So, but he'll find some. So it won't be Mayweather. It won't be a boxing match. That won't be until next year because of preparation.
I'll look at it this way. If Poirier and Khabib unify the belts. I think regardless if Poirier wins that fight, then maybe Conor fights Poirier first and then Khabib after. I think they want that Conor Khabib fight to be for the belts. So it depends.
I would agree with that.
So it depends on who wins that Poirier Khabib fight, who becomes the champ, who Conor would maybe fight first, and then. But he's got to come back to Khabib at some point.
Yeah, but Conor still would have to fight sometime this year.
Yeah.
Right.
It
give him a tomato maybe, can.
Maybe
it doesn't
he
matter.
Fights. Maybe he fights the loser of Khabib and Poirier, and then, if he wins that fight, maybe then I don't know.
We'll see.
I don't know.
I don't know. I could also see Conor McGregor never fighting again. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We led off today's show.
Thinking the game got the better of all of us last night.
In a little bit. We led off today's show. LSU baseball. It wasn't the prettiest game, was it? No. Didn't need to be. They got the win 8-6 over South Carolina in the opening round of the SEC tournament there in Hoover, Alabama. LSU was the 5 seed. South Carolina, the Gamecocks, were the 12 seed. And LSU had his hands full. 8-6. They gutted out the win. Sophomore right-hander Devin Fondo came in, was sensational, working 4 1/3 shutout innings on Tuesday night as the Tigers overcame an early 4-run deficit for the 8-6 win there at Hoover Metropolitan Stadium. Now LSU will face Mississippi State. First pitch is scheduled for 8 p.m. tonight. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game will be at 7:30. Now, obviously that could be pushed back depending on how the first three games of the day occur. If one of them goes into extras. Hell, the first game yesterday went into extra innings.
Right.
So that puts things, always kind of makes things interesting there, especially if you're the nightcap.
And they still weren't that far behind schedule, all things considered.
8:50, so they're about only an hour.
Yeah, which, I mean, because last night I watched the Zac Efron, Ted Bundy deal on Netflix. So that was how I killed time between, you know, the late start. Game normally would start at like 6, 6:30, something like that, maybe 7. Didn't start till almost 9. But all things considered, it wasn't too terribly late. If the same thing happened today, I would be okay as far as the start time goes.
So you'd be okay if it was around 8:50?
You can't ask. I mean, of course, I guess you can always ask for everything to work out perfectly. But I feel like when you have major college baseball being played like this on that level, with that many fans being in and out of the stadium, and the number of fans is only going to get higher as the weekend gets closer, I feel like staying within an hour of the intended start time when you're the final game of the day is not too bad.
No, that's not too bad. That's not too bad.
Now that I say that, tonight's game will start at 8:15, and then I'll look real dumb being like, oh, it wasn't too bad yesterday, and then they'll prove that they could have done way better or something. But that's fine.
Cole Henry got the start, made his first appearance on the mound since April 19th. He started the game for the Tigers. He pitched well in the first inning, but the second inning, the wheels kind of fell off. He ended up allowing 5 runs, 4 earned on 5 hits with no walks and 3 strikeouts. It could have been rust. You know, Cole was shut down because of arm soreness, and he was going to have a limited outing as it was. You know, Paul Maneri already kind of had indicated that when he made the announcement that Cole Henry was going to be the starter. They were probably looking for Cole to go 3 innings. That did not happen. They had to get Matthew Beck in to come in and kind of stop the bleeding. He got out of the inning, got out of the second inning, and then Devin Fondo came in and was sensational, followed by another strong performance by Todd Peterson as well. So LSU gets the victory. Wasn't the prettiest, but that's all that matters. They got the W. They're moving on to the double elimination portion of the tournament. And if they can just win one more game, whether that's tonight versus Mississippi State or another game maybe in the loser's bracket, if they lose tonight, they'll be able to do enough to host a regional. And that's really kind of the goal right now. Obviously, oh, well, look, the goal is to win the SEC tournament. Paul Menary and his staff, that's what they would like. But winning another game, getting to that point to be able to win another game so they can host a regional, is still in their grasp. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome Chad to the show. Chad, how are you doing this morning?
Doing well, man. Man, I think Henry pitched pretty well. I think some unfortunate things happened to him. There was a catcher interference, and then there was a play at second. I want to say with maybe two outs, the play at second baseman, he got the ball stuck in his web, and he couldn't throw him out, which would have been an easy out. Then things kind of deteriorated from there. But crazy things in baseball happen, man, that can cause, you know, a pitcher to do what he did last night. But unfortunately, for those couple, catcher interference and the second baseman play, the ball getting stuck in his web, it could have been a little bit different. But, man, I think they played with a little sense of urgency last night, and then so did South Carolina. You're going to get South Carolina's best game because they're fighting for their season, or now their season's over. I doubt they're going to make it. They looked a little bit different last night to me. I know it was a sloppy game, but the crowd was in it. A ton of LSU fans there, and I expect the same tonight. And I expect them to beat Mississippi State tonight, man. I think they're going to pull it off tonight. What's your thoughts about that, man? I'll hang up and listen. Thank y'all.
Appreciate the call, Chad.
Before you dive into your thoughts on how they'll do against Mississippi State tonight, I want to address what Chad said at the beginning of his phone call about Henry, because I agree to the naked eye. You know how baseball is one of those things where the old timers, the purists, they can look at a guy and, boy, that swing looks good. Boy, he's throwing the ball well today. And then there's the guys like Billy Bean that want to break everything down statistic by number and this and that.
Analytics.
Right. If you look at the analytics of Cole Henry last night, the stats and everything, wasn't probably a pretty average performance. I'll say that. It wasn't bad, but a pretty mediocre performance.
It was not up to his standard that he's set for himself this year.
But watching him throw the ball 94 mile an hour, painting the black, the movement so crazy on a fastball, Saul Garza is setting up outside and catching the ball for a strike on the inside corner, and this is just a two-seam fastball he's throwing here. I mean, watching Cole Henry looked great. Menary said it in his little mid-inning interview that he absolutely despises. I laugh every time Menary has to do one of those because you can see it's all over his face how much he hates it. Doing these interviews. But he even said it himself during that thing about how he thought Cole was throwing great, and then the most important thing, and then I'll let you go ahead and take over from Mississippi State here, but the most important thing that Paul Menary said about Cole Henry, I think, last night, especially in that little mid-inning deal there, was that he felt great. He didn't have any soreness. Right. There was no – he still feels fine. He came out of the game because of the situation in the game, but not because he was feeling a little sore, any kind of tightness or anything like that. So I agree with you, Chad, that Cole Henry looked very good last night, and he threw well. And, I mean, you can't ask for more than 94 miles an hour on the outside corner. It's just I'm hoping next time we see Cole Henry – The pitching is the same, but we get a little bit better results.
I agree. He looked good. He had good command, and I agree with Chad. The Garza play, the interference was huge.
And the play, that's a little bit on Cole Henry, though. Cole Henry's got to throw that ball three more feet to the outside.
I agree. So baseball's funny, like Chad said, and we said it earlier on today's show. It's a funny game. Weird stuff happens from time to time.
Like, you want to blame Brant Broussard for not tightening the web and his – like, no, it's not his fault. It's unlucky.
You get a little unlucky. It was a little sloppy. If I'm an LSU fan, I love what I see from my bats. Lineup, multiple guys had multiple hit games last night, had a multi-hit game last night. I like what I see there. I do like Cole, and here's the thing. You may not see him the rest of the SEC tournament, but I can guarantee you're going to see him in the NCAA regional. You can go ahead and book that. That's going to happen. I think that's the other reason why Paul Menary and Dunn decided to throw him out there in the opener. Let him get back into the kind of the mojo of things. They may use him if they make a run here in the SEC tournament, but you're going to see Cole Henry pitch in the NCAA regional. That's going to happen.
And probably start a game.
Probably start a game, right? How great, though, was Devin Fontenot last night? and Todd Peterson. And that's the other thing that you have to take away that's a big plus for LSU. Fondo's had some up and downs, right, this year. Peterson, they moved away from Todd. They just moved away from him. They're like, we're not even going to use you anymore. And yet, towards the end of the season, Peterson found his mojo. Devin Fondo's found his mojo. They looked extremely good. If you can get those guys to pitch like that for you, that's great. You still got Matthew Beck. He got you out of the jam last night. Limited the damage. Great. The wild card is going to be Zach Hess. You know what you're going to get out of Devin Fondo. You know what you're going to get out of Todd Peterson. You're going to eat up innings for you. You can't use Devin today because he pitched four innings for you last night.
Sounded like a tennis player out there pitching to. He was throwing the ball. Huh! Every time I was like, go ahead, Dev, do your thing.
Now Todd will go out there and he'll be like, no, Skip, I can go out there. He'll be telling his skipper, he'll be telling Paul Maneri that he can go out there.
He wants the ball tonight.
He'd want the ball. He'd want to pitch every day. But Zach Hess is going to be the question mark for me. That's the question mark for LSU. The bats have gotten better as the season progressed down the stretch. They've turned it around. They hit the ball really well. You got Devin Fondo's return to form. Todd Peterson's return to form. That's great. Walker and Marceau pitched well towards the end of the season. They're probably going to give you good outings. But do you trust Zach Hess? If Zach Hess gets put into a game, let's say it's tonight's game. It's a tight game. It's a one-run game.
Mm-hmm.
You have a one-run lead. It's the seventh inning. You bring in Zach Hess.
Yeah.
Are you nervous?
Yeah. If I'm bringing in anybody besides Mariano Rivera, I'm nervous, though, in fairness.
Okay.
Maybe
let me rephrase. If you have a choice between Todd Peterson, Devin Fontenot, and Zach Hess, which one of those three pitchers, it comes into a game and it's a close game, which one of those pitchers do you trust the least to not give up a home run and give
and
up
they're
a
all, and they're all healthy. We're all on level playing ground here.
Uh-huh.
What person do I trust the
least? Based on their performance this year. Based on their performance from last weekend.
I mean, I guess Todd Peterson. I still like Zach Hess more just because he's got the up. It's one of those upside is higher
you
things.
You trust him more, though, even though he gives up home runs in big moments.
I know. That's the thing.
I'm not saying who's the better pitcher.
Right.
Hess is
right.
The better pitcher. He's got better stuff. He's got better big league stuff.
I mean, up until last night, the answer would have been Devin Fontenot. You know what I mean? If you're telling me one inning, three outs, pick a guy between those three, up until last night's performance, I would have said I have the least amount of faith in Devin Fontenot. But then after last night, you can't say that. I think it's funny how before the season started, before we even threw first pitch, the big question for this LSU team was Zach Hess. Is he a Friday night guy? Is he a starter? Is he this? Is he that? We're all the way now to the SEC tournament.
And we're still asking.
And the question is still about Zach Hess. And it's not necessarily if he's a starter now or not, but the question on this team is still Zach Hess. And that's weird to me.
It is curious that we're still discussing that hasn't been solidified. And look, I'll give Zach all the credit in the world because he will talk to the media. And he did so at the end of the Auburn series where he gave up the game. He still addresses the media. He still owns it.
Yeah.
He does not shy away from his faults. And that is going to bode well for him at the next level. It's just he is Wild Thing, right? And that's the thing with Zach. When he is on, he's the best pitcher on their staff. He has the stuff he has is the best when he's on. But when he's just like a quarter of an inch off with his location, that strikeout becomes a home run in a heartbeat. But that's who he is. That's his. That's what he brings to the table. That's his stuff. So,
Chad does not trust Zach Hess.
Chad called back, says he does not trust Zach Hess.
Well, I assume that's what he meant. I'm paraphrasing, of course. Chad, I cannot, nor will I answer your first question that you posed to me.
Oh, I'm curious now. You're going to tell me during the break?
Maybe.
Oh, nice. Nice. We are still efforting trying to get the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair.
He ain't got the best of him. You can't really be mad at him. I mean, he told us he would be good to go, but that was before I think he realized he was going to be in one of the longest SEC tournament games of all time.
We'll still try to get him in. We still got some time. If we make the adjustment,
I mean,
we make the adjustment.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
You have to stay tuned. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll dive more into LSU and UL baseball right here on 103.7 The Game. Houston Astros Weekend Getaway Sweepstakes powered by Lafayette Roofing in A Loft, Houston downtown. Enter in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse Rewards Club to win four tickets to the Saturday and Sunday games, game day parking, a ballpark tour, and a one-night hotel stay in Houston. This getaway is for June 8th and 9th games for the Astros versus the Baltimore Orioles. You can enter in the Clubhouse Rewards Club at 103.7thegame.com. Once again, Houston Astros Weekend Getaway Sweepstakes powered by Lafayette Roofing and Aloft Houston downtown.
You ever seen that episode of South Park where Stan's dad moves out to like a weed farm, Integrity Farms, and he makes his son a hemp knit cap, and every time he puts the cap on Stan's head, this song plays. It is really, really funny. He puts it on, and you hear, he takes it off. He puts the hat back on. He takes it off. He puts the hat back on. That's great. It's really, really funny.
Cody shoots, doing what he does best, interrupting sports talk with
Vika.
Not sports talk.
It feels very contrived pushing the own button for myself.
If I had the button, I'd push it. But I don't. I don't have the button. I just came up with the idea. If I could.
I've pushed it three times now, and it's feeling more and more contrived every time.
Well, see, I mean, maybe that has an effect. I don't know.
I don't want it to stop, though.
I don't want it to stop, though. Hey, coming up here in the third hour of RP3 and Company, we'll be talking to our good friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. OTAs have begun for NFL teams. And the Saints have begun as well. So we'll get Andrew's thoughts on that, on what he is hoping to look for. You know, this is also kind of a weird time for teams. It's OTAs, but also guys get injured during this time. It happens every year where guys, they'll get banged up. Look at Reuben Foster for the Washington Redskins. On the third play of the drill, he shredded his knee. He's probably going to be out for the year. So this has happened. So in a lot of ways, NFL teams get very nervous for OTAs. You know, training camp is one thing because then you're closer to the season. You've had some time to develop a rapport with the guys. You're going through drills and everything like that. OTAs, that's when you have... That's when you have these injuries occur. Now, the Saints did sign earlier this week a defensive lineman from a division rival. It's just not Gerald McCoy yet. I'm holding out hope. They signed Wes Horton, who's played for the Carolina Panthers. They reached an agreement with the former defensive lineman from the Panthers. He's 29 years old, defensive end. He first entered the league as an undrafted free agent from USC with the Panthers in 2013. And he only had 2 sacks in 10 games with Carolina that season, but would go on to see action in 77 games, including 35 starts over 6 years with the team. So this is a guy who worked himself up from an undrafted rookie free agent and becoming a integral part of their front seven. He's 6'5", 265 pounds. He has 15 and a half sacks, 23 quarterback hits, 7 forced fumbles, and 95 tackles during his career. He joins the Saints team that already has 2 former Carolina teammates, Ted Ginn Jr. and linebacker A.J. Klein. Look, this is all about depth. This gives you another guy. They can be part of the rotation with Marcus Davenport. They also got Mario Edwards Jr. This just gives them more depth on the defensive line, but if I'm the Saints, I'm still going out and trying to get myself Gerald McCoy. Get the big fella. Can you imagine having him, adding him?
The Rick Ross of defensive linemen. Oh,
yes, he is the Rick Ross of defensive linemen. That's going to do it here for the second hour of RP3 and Company. Coming up, we'll talk a little Houston Astros baseball. Take it back right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Pitch on the way. That's a tapper. Weekly hit out in front of the plate. Chirinos, he'll field it on the grass. Throws to first in time to get Abreu. And that is the ball game. The Houston Astros one hit the Chicago White Sox as the Astros win it by a final of 5-1. Brilliant pitching for the Astros and timely hitting, particularly in their four-run fifth.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is the man on the ones and twos, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We spent the majority of today's show talking a lot about LSU baseball winning their SEC opener against South Carolina, having to rely on Devin Fondeau and Todd Peterson out of the bullpen to eat up a bunch of innings after Cole Henry was run out of the game in the second inning. And they found a way to win, though. They move on in advance. They'll play Mississippi State tonight as double elimination portion of the tournament begins. That game is scheduled for 8 p.m. Pre-game show set for 7:30, but that is the last game of the day, so things could get pushed back because of that. But you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. We'll take care of you for LSU baseball. Raging Cajuns baseball as well. Took care of business. They won their single elimination game versus App State, a team that had beat them two out of three times during the regular season. They beat App State. They move on. They're going to be taking on Georgia Southern, the two seed, today. That game's going to be 11:30 a.m. our time. So our teams are moving on, finding ways to win, moving on in the tournament. But before we get to a little Houston Astros talk, they beat the Chicago White Sox last night 5-1. We're going to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on Doug to the show. Doug, how are you this morning?
Hey, Ray. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Not a problem,
man.
I
meant to do this earlier this week, but I want to give the Lady Cajuns a shout-out, man.
By all means.
I mean, they had a great season. Those last two games against Ole Miss was just, I mean, especially the last game, they had it. You know, they were right there, three outs away. And, I mean, the Lady Rebels just, it was just a baseball game. It wasn't like the Lady Cajuns made a bunch of mistakes or anything. It was just, that's baseball, you know. But I just wanted to give those ladies a shout out. They had a great season, and I hope they have another one next year. But that's what I wanted to say, Ray.
I appreciate you giving us a call, Doug. And, yes, take a moment to congratulate them. Look, this is a team that won 50 games.
50-4 in the regular season.
50-4 in the regular season, undefeated in Sun Belt Conference play, including the tournament. They had the Sun Belt Player of the Year. They had the Sun Belt Pitcher of the Year. They had terrific milestones. And for that team to do all of that in Jerry Glasgow's second year when they lost their volunteer coach and his daughter right before the start of the season in a tragic automobile accident on I-10. They were able to overcome that, rally around that. They got closer because of that, and they had a sensational season. They fell short, obviously, again, in the NCAA regional round versus an SEC opponent. You thought they had Ole Miss on the ropes. But the Rebels, look, the Rebels proved that they belonged, and the Rebels proved that they deserved hosting a regional, and they showed that by winning two games. They did the toughest thing that you can possibly do is win two games against the same opponent in the same day, and that's what Ole Miss did against the Raging Cajuns. But the Raging Cajuns softball team has nothing to hang their heads on or hang their heads about. They're laying down a great foundation. This is a team that only loses four seniors. That's it. Four seniors. Allison DeVille, Lexi Como, Keely Milligan, Kara Grimion. Kara's been a great leader at third base. They're going to miss her. Lexi has been a utility player, leader. Yeah, and Keely Milligan, the Texas A&M transfer who set the stolen base record for the Raging Cajuns. They're going to miss her, sure. But this has still got a great young team coming back, including Summer Ellison and others. Courtney Grimion, Kara's younger sister. They have other big-time playmakers coming in the recruiting trail, but also stars coming back. So expect the Raging Cajuns to be right back in the mix again next year. So, yes, thank you for the call, Doug. Appreciate that, brother.
And that right there is about all that needs to be said to tell you where this Cajun softball program is, because they went 50-4, had an incredible season this season, and we can sit here with the utmost confidence and say that we almost unfairly expect something similar next season.
Yeah, the expectations.
It's almost unfair to expect better, but we do.
Yes, because they're a nationally ranked program.
I mean, that's just where the prestige of the UL softball program is right now. I grew up much closer to Baton Rouge than I did to Lafayette. And I, you know, didn't follow softball until I got older and started umpiring it and then realized that how intricate of a game it is.
Humble brag by you.
And well, no, not even, because, I mean, it just was one of those things to where it was eye-opening for me to think, you know, softball to me was always one of those things, oh, the ball's bigger, the field is smaller, they throw underhand, and then, you know, you actually learn some of the nuances of it, and you realize that there is a lot more that goes into it than just a mini version of a baseball game. And I just think it's very impressive now that, if you ask me, and this is coming from someone who's, you know, grown up, you know, closer to LSU than UL, I would say that UL softball may be the premier softball team in the state. I know that's up for discussion and we can argue till the cows come home, but the fact that UL even can somewhat stake claim to that is, it says a lot about the program, and I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon.
I've long said this. The most consistent and best program that the University of Louisiana puts out is the softball team.
Right. It could be the most consistent program out of any school in the entire state.
You could make that argument.
Consistent.
Because year in and year out, they're ranked. Year in and year out, they're in the mix to – they're always in an NCAA regional. They're always in the mix to get to a super regional. They're a nationally ranked program.
They're like LSU baseball at this point.
They are consistent year in and year out. It does not matter who the coach is.
Apparently.
It just doesn't. The program is that good, and it's that well-respected and revered, and it's more consistent. Now, look, you may get more fans to show up for a football game.
Right.
Yeah, maybe. That's a discussion for another day. But the softball team is the most consistent, and I think it's the best product that the university puts out there athletic-wise. It's the most consistent, right. And I think it's the best.
Well, I appreciate the call there from Doug, giving us one last chance here to shout out and give a little shine to the Raging Cajun Softball Club there. So thank you for that, Doug.
So thanks to Doug for that. But let's get to the Houston Astros baseball talk. They did defeat the Chicago White Sox last night 5-1.
Newsflash, Justin Verlander and the Houston Astros are good.
Yeah, they're pretty good, man. They're good at the baseball thing. Verlander, 8 innings. One hit, one run. He struck out 12.
That one hit was that Zach Hess special.
Yeah, the Zach Hess special. Verlander, sensational. He just keeps marching his way early on. Has there been a better pitcher in the American League? No, there has not. He's your front runner for the Cy Young Award. He's been pitching that well. He's been pitching that dominant. Another terrific performance by Verlander. Eight innings, only one hit, one earned run, striking out 12 at the plate. They got production from a multitude of guys because this lineup is the best in all of Major League Baseball. Josh Reddick got himself a hit. Michael Brantley, terrific offseason pickup for the Astros. He went 1-for-4 with two RBIs. Carlos Carrera got himself a hit. Gurriel got himself a hit. He went 2-for-4. Diaz went 2-for-4. Tony Kemp, 1-for-3. Once again, Jose Altuve, not playing. Okay. Springer Dinger, not playing. They're resting. They're recovering from injuries. And Alex Bregman went 0-for-3 at the plate. He did score a run. Went 0-for-3 at the plate, and yet it didn't matter. They still found a way. Without Altuve in the lineup, without Springer in the lineup, and with Alex Bregman, the former LSU star, going hitless, they still found a way to put up five runs. That tells you everything that you need to know about how good of a team this Astros team is. They're now 33-16 on the season. Ridiculous. 33-16 on the season. Verlander, phenomenal. It's a season-high 12 strikeouts for him just this season. And Verlander has dominated. He has owned the Chicago White Sox. In his 45th career start against the Southsiders, who Cody expressed yesterday on the show how much hatred he has for the South Side of Chicago. I'm pretty sure the people in Chicago kind of hate the South Side of Chicago.
They did, although they did, Shoeless Joe wrong.
There we go. In his 45th career start against the Chicago Southsiders, Verlander came out dealing. He started the night with two strikeouts and an 11-pitch first inning. He only threw 11 pitches in the first inning, and yet still was able to get two strikeouts. Ridiculous. Just he's just been so good this season. He struck out 12, allowed just one hit. It's his fifth career game with 10-plus Ks and one or fewer hits. Only three pitchers in the live ball era have more such games. Bob Feller, Randy Johnson, and Nolan Ryan. That's a pretty good list. He also had them swinging. He had 27 swinging strikes last night. His slider is absolutely filth. And once again, no Altuve, no Springer. Bregman goes hitless, and they still find a way to rack up wins. Just phenomenal performance by the Astros, who are the best team in baseball.
Indeed.
And Carlos Carrera, who was banged up last year, had an up-and-down year last year. We've talked about it on the show. And only 45 games played this season. Carrera is nearly halfway to the 65 RBIs that he produced in an injury-plagued 110 games last season. So, not only did they get Brantley in the offseason, a terrific offseason acquisition, Carrera being healthy and playing at a high level is huge for this team. Because with those two guys playing at the level that they are, they can absorb a hitless night by Bregman or Altuve having the worst hitting season of his career and being injured. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Astros will continue their four-game series with the White Sox tonight. Gerrit Cole is going to get the start. That's right. First pitch is slated for 7:10. You can listen to that game live on our sister station, KVOL, The Rewind. 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette. Also, if you're traveling to Lake Charles tonight, you can listen to it on 104.1. Yeah! Astros, baby! When we come back, we'll keep the conversation going right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service. And to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We got our good friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's going to be joining us here around 8:32. He's going to talk a little bit about the New Orleans Saints OTAs. As well, we'll get his thoughts if he believes that the Saints should go after Gerald McCoy, the former Tampa Bay Buck All-Pro and multiple Pro Bowl defensive tackle. But I want to touch on the New Orleans Pelicans because we haven't really had a chance to do that. We touched on them just a little bit on Monday. How things have been just going such in the great direction. They get rid of Dell Demps. They bring in David Griffin, who won a world championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers, to be the executive vice president. They have Gail Benson committing millions of dollars to improve their facilities. They get one of the most respected trainers in all of the NBA, poach him away from the Phoenix Suns. So they're improving their facilities. They got an actual basketball guy to run the franchise. They get the best trainer, one of the best trainers in the league, to join them because that's been a bugaboo of the Pels, right? They have these injuries issues, and their recovery and their rehab has always been questioned as well. They do that. Oh, and they win the NBA draft lottery. Now they have the top pick in this summer's draft. They're going to take Zion Williamson. But then they brought in Trajan Langdon. What a great move. Terrific move. Now, I remember Trajan Langdon when he was a player for Duke. He's worked his way up the ranks, and now he's going to be the Pelicans' general manager. So we have an actual legit vice president of basketball operations in David Griffin, world champion. He's going to run the franchise. We have a commitment from Gail Benson, the owner of the Pels and the Saints, that they want to make this a valuable franchise, a franchise known for winning and not being a hot mess of trade demands. She's investing money in improving the facilities that they have, trying to make them top-notch. So you have a commitment from the owner. You have money from the owner. You have a new director of basketball, vice president of basketball operations. You have a new head trainer that's going to lead the training staff to improve the training and recovery of your team. You win the lottery. You got the top pick. And now you bring in a GM and Trajan Langdon.
I also saw yesterday, watching the LSU game on the little ticker on the bottom of the screen there, that Griffin has had a conversation, at least one, I don't know, it could have been more than one, but at least one conversation directly with Zion. And he called it, Griffin called it, in quote on the bottom line, the fact that Zion doesn't want to play in New Orleans is a, and here was the quote, false narrative.
Yeah, and we called that
his quote. So David Griffin saying Zion is very excited to join the Pelicans. So we're getting back to those lines that you expect to hear with these types of things. You know what I mean? The national media lashed out at first and was like, New Orleans sucks. He doesn't want to go there. He should go back to school and do this. And it's now it's starting to transition towards what we usually hear and what we kind of expected to hear, that even if this was, you know, the Phoenix Suns or whoever, not New Orleans, that, oh, he's still excited to go there and start his NBA career.
Yes. So because the national media got upset because my daughter will be 5 years old in September. Mm-hmm. And she has better composure than some of these cats in the national media after the NBA draft lottery.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
like they threw a temper tantrum because Zion Williamson, a generational talent, wasn't going to be playing in New York or L.A. Well, guess what? The Lakers and Knicks aren't relevant, and they haven't been for, you know, a long time, 15 years. Okay? The Knicks even longer. Okay? The Pels slash Hornets have more playoff series victories than the Knicks do in the past 20 years.
Was that one?
Okay. So you know, put things in perspective. No one goes, it's just a very antiquated way of looking at things. There was a time where you had to go to the big markets to get the advertising revenue. You had to go, if you're in baseball, you had to go play for the Dodgers or the Yankees so you could be connected to Hollywood and Madison Avenue, so you could be on billboards and be on in television commercials, okay? That's what you had to do. In your basketball, you had to play for the Lakers or for the Celtics or for the Knicks or the Bulls. You had to play in one of those big markets. But everything has changed. The Miami Heat have won championships. The Oklahoma City Thunder have played for an NBA World Championship.
The Detroit Pistons were really good for a while there in the 2000s.
They won a title, beating the Lakers. So this whole notion that you have to be, I've mentioned it before, Russell Westbrook is one of the biggest names in the NBA. And he re-upped. He's in Oklahoma City. He has his own fashion line. You don't have this whole notion that you have to play for one of these teams. These guys live. Look, LeBron James had two houses in L.A. before he moved and became a member of the Lakers.
It's 2019, y'all. The Cleveland Browns are about to be good. Get used to it.
Just like, get over it. But I didn't have a chance to really get into it, but I love the Langdon move. He's been part of the Brooklyn's front office, helping transform the Nets from one of the worst teams into a 2019 playoff team after being hampered with losing all those first-round picks that they had done years before with the Boston Celtics. He somehow helped turn the Nets into a playoff team. He also has a great background with the G League, knowing how to look at talent, and he's a former player. This is a good hire, and him and Griff work together in Cleveland. So you see it. Gale committed with money.
The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town.
Number one overall pick. Is this enough to keep Anthony Davis? Is this enough with the new front office leadership and the new commitment to training and money and everything like this? Does AD say, you know what? I want to stay. Maybe. But if I'm the Pelicans front office, I'm like, okay, you want to stay? Here's a contract. You're not going to just play for the year. Because if Anthony Davis isn't going to commit to sign a deal and doesn't sign a deal to stay long term, you go ahead and trade him and you ship him, because then you'll just lose him for nothing. When we come back, we'll talk to Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos. And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. It's 24 hours of sports coverage. You need to check it out. You can also find us on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We've talked a lot of baseball today. Heavy baseball talk. It's time to get some football and a little hoops action onto the show. As we head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest, he joins us every week. He's one of the men behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's our good friend. It's Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Good morning to you, Raymond.
Appreciate you coming on, making time for us. Look, before we get into the New Orleans Saints discussion, I want to get your thoughts on the Pels, because they have just been winning the offseason left and right. Obviously, it goes back to David Griffin being hired as the executive vice president of basketball operations. And since then, it's just been great move after great move. They get one of the best trainers in the NBA. David Griffin poaches him away from Phoenix because they worked together there with the Suns years ago. He comes to New Orleans, hopefully can help turn around the issues they've had with injuries and, more importantly, with recovery from injuries. We have Gail Benson publicly committing herself to building a great brand of basketball here in New Orleans and for the entire Gulf Coast. She's also pledging money to upgrade the training facilities. They win the draft lottery, to get the number one overall pick, and now they've hired a GM in Trayon Langdon, former Duke player, and a guy that's worked his way up with great success in both the G League and with the Brooklyn Nets last season, helping them get to the playoffs. Your thoughts on everything that's been going on with the Pels and how much excitement is there down in New Orleans for this team?
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of excitement. You know, I think, first of all, you look at the hirings of both Griffin and then Langdon on the heels of each other, and those are really their top two candidates when they were initially interviewing. So for them to find roles for their top two guys and get both into the building, I think is incredible and really says a lot about the organization and what they're trying to accomplish here. And, you know, I think it's one of those things where a lot of times you make your own luck. And obviously very fortunate to get the first overall pick. But when the dominoes start to fall and you start to build a good organization, luck seems to follow you, and that certainly was the case there. So I don't see how you couldn't be excited if you're a Pelicans fan or from New Orleans. And, man, I tell you, I don't know what's going to happen with Anthony Davis, but certainly you feel good about the management that's in place to be able to execute a proper trade. I think there was so much anxiety and trepidation about Del Demps and the missteps and the struggles that he's had as a GM and him managing that trade. And I think so many Pelicans fans were really against the Pelicans making a deal before the deadline, just because it would have Del Demps' stamp of approval on it. You really wanted a new regime to come in and handle this. But now you have to ask yourself, I mean, is this something that Davis would want to be a part of? And, you know, I think fans are torn maybe on whether they would welcome him back or not, but man, all of a sudden you have a possibility of either Davis paired with Zion Williamson, or you could trade him and get a tremendous amount of assets. And I think the future is bright and very exciting for the Pelicans. So it's great to see, and you know, ultimately they will be judged by what they do on the court. So there's still, I think, a little bit of a wait and see, but when you look at the pieces that they're putting together, this really feels like the Saints in 2006. When you look back to the hiring of Sean Payton, the signing of Drew Brees, the drafting of Reggie Bush, Mickey Loomis kind of really starting to come into his own as a GM, this feels a lot like the Saints in 2006. Now, we'll see if they can have that kind of success, but you see some parallels there.
We're going to hang up with Andrew Juge. Connection's a little shaky there, so we're going to get him back on the line here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. What Andrew was saying from the Saints Happy Hour podcast is that this reminds him of everything that's going on right now with the New Orleans Pelicans, that it reminds him of what happened back in 2006 with the New Orleans Saints when they decided to hire Sean Payton as their new head coach, and they got Drew Brees in free agency after the San Diego Chargers didn't want him anymore, and they brought him in, and then they got the number two overall pick, and they took Reggie Bush. It does very much feel like that's what's going on now with the New Orleans Pelicans, with everything that the moves they've been making, with David Griffin being hired as the vice president of basketball operations, Trayon Langdon being hired as the general manager, new training staff, they win the lottery, Gail Benson has publicly back to this team and say that she's committed to producing a winner, so to speak, in New Orleans. So that's what Andrew was talking about, that it seems eerily reminiscent of 2006 with the New Orleans Saints. We welcome back Andrew to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Andrew, so you were saying before we had to break there is that it does remind you of what occurred with the Saints back in 2006.
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, when you look at Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis, and, you know, obviously they had the second pick, but they end up really getting the guy in Reggie Bush that I think they would have taken first overall. I really think the stars are kind of aligning that way. It has a lot of that feel. Now, ultimately, they'll be judged by their success on the field, on the court when it comes to the Pelicans. But I think ultimately there's a lot to be excited about.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Andrew, let's get to the Saints. OTAs is going on right now. As someone who covers the team, what's the coaching staff looking for? What with the OTAs, it's not the full contact of training camp. This is just OTAs right now. Mainly, a lot of times, I know I know a lot of people just grimace because that's usually when a lot of injuries occur. We saw what happened with Reuben Foster with the Washington Redskins, where he's now more than likely going to be out for the entire season. And that occurred on the third play of his participation in a drill on the first day of OTAs the other day. What are the coaching staff and those guys looking for during this period?
Well, I think base installs is kind of where you start with that. There's an acclimation period, I think, for both ways, really. The coaching staff getting used to the players and the players getting used to the coaching staff. And I think, every year there's a lot of turnover, and that's the name of the game. And when you have a 90-man roster, I mean, you're lucky if half of your roster is back from the previous year. It's one of those things where I think you've got a lot of new players, a lot of rookies, a lot of undrafted rookies. They're going to come in, and really this is their first taste of the NFL and learning the playbook and getting to get reps with their teammates, getting reps with the veterans, learning. So I think that's a big part of it, and certainly I think this will be big for players like Latavius Murray, who have been in the league for a while, but this is their first offseason with the Saints where they get a chance to get some work in and meet their teammates and that sort of thing. So I think it's really about the basics when they get started. And, of course, you know, the old adage is there's only so much you can do in shorts before the pads come on. It's really hard to assess how players are doing. So I think more than physical, this is really a mental, an opportunity to get in the weight room and an opportunity to acclimate. But then ultimately, I think it's a lot about understanding the offense, understanding the playbook, understanding the concepts. And I think a lot of this will be mental work.
We're on with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, let's talk a little bit about some of the moves that they've made. They added depth by poaching a longtime player from an NFC South rival. We'll get to the guy that we all want them to sign, or at least I do, and we'll get your opinion on that. But they did get in Wes Horton. This is a guy, a pass rusher, defensive end from the Carolina Panthers. He was an undrafted rookie who developed him into a part-time starter and a very big rotational guy for the Panthers front seven. What did you think of the Saints locking up Wes Horton earlier this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's good for competition. I think right now your primary backup defensive end is Trey Hendrickson. And so I don't think you can go into the season handing him a job because there's not a lot of competition. I think right now Hendrickson kind of just assumes that role, and really there's not much unless there was a huge surprise that can compete with him as the primary backup there. And frankly, that's not good enough. So I like the signing in that it forces Hendrickson to earn his spot, and I think that'll be a fun battle to watch as camp kind of unfolds between Horton and Hendrickson for that backup defensive end spot, which, whoever wins that battle will get to play a lot, as a pass rushing sub. So, we'll keep an eye on that. I mean, it's certainly not sexy like the Ziggy Ansah pursuit. And, I think when you look at Ansah and what he's done over his career, and obviously he had the shoulder injury, but if he bounces back from that, the impact that he could have had on the field was potentially tremendous. So I think Horton is more of a role player, a guy that's been in the league for a long time, knows what to do, has had some success in his career, but has never really had the light fully come on in terms of just dominating in any sense of the word. So I think he's a sub pass rusher. He'll battle for a roster spot. I think he's got a good chance of making the team. But beyond that, I think it's just a depth move, and I don't know that it's anything to necessarily get overly excited about, but listen, when guys go down, you have to have competent players that can come in, and I think he can be that.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, reports came out, first reported by Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, that the Saints were hosting free agent special teams ace Bryden Trawick. Yesterday. He's a safety. He went to the 2017 Pro Bowl after leading the Tennessee Titans with 17 special teams tackles. A year earlier, he played for the Oakland Raiders. He's known as a gunner and a sound tackler on special teams. What do you make of that and the Saints' commitment this entire offseason of beefing up their special teams?
it's really been crazy how focused they have been on making sure that's rock solid. Between re-signing their own guys, Will Lutz was extended. They brought Robertson, Banjo back, Justin Hardy's back. So you know, there's a lot of guys on this team. But then you look at Marcus Sherrill, who they brought, the punt returner. And, you know, they've got, I think, heavy investment on special teams. You talk about the whole coaching staff, which has changed there. And they get a guy that's arguably one of the best in the business. So, you know, you take that in totality, and obviously there's a true commitment. And I think the one place where you could maybe say last year, I mean, the kicking game was so good, punting, the field goal kicking with Lutz, and the coverage units were pretty good. And so really I think the one area where you can say it was a little shaky was the return game for the Saints. And, you know, again, you talk about Sherrill's being signed and what that does for the return unit. So the Saints are clearly committed. I think it sends a pretty strong message that Sean Payton says, hey, if I can find a guy better than Justin Hardy or Chris Banjo, I'm okay cutting those guys. If I find someone better and my special teams unit is so good that I have to cut guys like that that are excellent special teams players, then I'm comfortable doing that. What I'm not comfortable doing is going into any game this season and being inferior to the other team in that phase of the game. So he's doubling down on special teams, and that's after the Saints. They want to be better than every team they play and have a distinctive advantage going into every game on special teams, and I think they've done enough work to ensure that.
We're on with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, one last question before I let you go, brother. The Tampa Bay Bucs are doing Tampa Bay Buck things. They decide to part ways with the leader of their defense, a great locker room guy in Gerald McCoy. He's a multiple all-pro defensive tackle, multiple pro bowler, and they part ways with him, and now they're going to sign, apparently reports have, signing Ndamukong Suh to essentially the same money that they were going to pay McCoy this season on just a one-year deal. I don't need your comments on the Bucs running their organization like a carnival ride, because that's what they're doing, and we know that. But do you think the Saints should make a run at Gerald McCoy, even bring him in on a one-year deal, and add him to that front seven?
I'm kind of on the fence on this one. I feel like yes and no. I mean, as a general rule, Raymond, I'm with you, because I feel like anytime you can add a player that's an upgrade, or anytime you can add talent to your roster, you need to seriously consider it, especially if you can get a guy on a one-year deal where it's not a long-term commitment. He's not going to affect the salary cap pass this year. If you can make that work financially, then I think it's worth exploring. There is a reality that I think that's not really a position of need for the Saints. I mean, when you look at the realistically Sheldon Rankins, I mean, he's probably not going to be back before October at best. And there's a good chance that we're not really going to see the Sheldon Rankins that the Saints had last year until December. Right. I think considering the injury that he had, that was very significant, I think it's going to take some time for him to get back to normal. So, but they do sign Malcolm Brown. Now, Malcolm Brown, he's the nose tackle. He plays, you know, one-gap technique, and so I think he's not necessarily he's more of a replacement for Tyler Davison. But then you have David Onyemata coming back. They also make the investment in Mario Edwards. They still have Stallworth, who played for the team last year and was a really nice surprise as an undrafted rookie. So they're pretty deep at defensive tackle, even without Rankins. Now, again, McCoy, to me, is a clear upgrade over all those guys I just named, and I think he would certainly help mitigate the loss of Rankins for any time period. But ultimately, that's a thing the Saints have to juggle and weigh, because I do think that defensive tackle is a little crowded, and I don't see a clear path to McCoy playing a significant amount of snaps unless, you know, you really want to stunt the development of David Onyemata.
Andrew, appreciate your insight as always, my friend. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you next week.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me.
It's Andrew Juge at the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's not wrong there. They don't necessarily need Gerald McCoy, but if they're trying to make a run, could Gerald McCoy be that missing piece? If they had Gerald McCoy on that team last year in the playoffs when Rankins got hurt, Would he have been able to make a difference in that NFC Championship game? I don't know. And that's what the Saints have to do.
No, he wouldn't have made a difference. The refs were going to screw it up anyways. It didn't matter. Saints weren't winning that game.
My man. Finishing strong. I love it.
I can't use the word I want to.
I know you do. We'll wrap things up after this break here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Reminder, we got you covered tonight for LSU baseball. But before then, we'll have the Jordy Holberg Show from 2 to 4. We'll have the good brother, Ben Love. We'll be back hosting Bumper to Bumper Sports. He's going to take you from 4 to 6, and then Five Guys Stories and Lies will take over from 6 o'clock. And they're going to lead you into LSU pregame. So it could be an hour, could be an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. So Five Guys and Stories and Lies will lead you into LSU pregame there for the LSU for the SEC baseball tournament. First pitch is scheduled for 8 o'clock, pregame scheduled for 7:30, but that could be pushed back due to the other games. I want to thank our guest today, Dan McDonald, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, giving us that recap from the Cajuns baseball at the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, and Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It was a terrific show. I want to thank Cody for doing his job and doing it well. Y'all be safe out there today. Have a tremendous day, and we'll talk to y'all tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock right here on 103.7 The Game.